Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin in an airport, probably delayed as always. I mean, that's the creme de la creme, ain't it? The cream on top. Not only did you have to fly out there and watch last night's game, but a delay, right?
Like my flight's been delayed 3 or 4 times. There's no weather. I don't understand why these things keep happening. I'm not talking about the football game. I'm talking about my flight. Yeah, it's insult to injury, I guess. I've been on the road for somebody pointed this out to me yesterday. It didn't occur to me because of where my brain is right now. San Francisco last week, that's where the Bears had their worst defeat under the season and Thomas Brown's debut. I went to Philly for the Eagles Steelers game to be on radio, to call that game on sideline for radio. And then I went to Minneapolis. So I literally have gone across the country and back and forth and seen some good football, seen some pretty bad football along the way.
Yeah, most of the good football from the other team, unfortunately. Yeah. Listen, we got a lot to talk about because, again, another abysmal evening of football for the Chicago Bears on primetime. Caleb Williams did not look good in the slightest. I mean, a couple of moments at most. You had a defense that is basically dead. I mean, at this point, we're rehashing the same topics. But I do think, and this was kind of my takeaway from last night's game. By the way, hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Lead a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. We've seen enough games from Caleb Williams for me to have some level of concern on the fact that he continues to miss touchdowns, Courtney. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is Rome Odunze down the right sideline, Keenan Allen down the left sideline. They beat their man. They're open. You hit them on the hands. It's a walk-in touchdown. The deep ball accuracy was something that Caleb Williams was supposed to be known for. And yes, I understand pocket breaking down, bad offensive line, all of those things do play into how accurate you can be. But more times than not, we have left games this season going, that's a touchdown.
And you feel like, at least, you know, I don't want to call it the excuse, but the credence he was given is, oh, well, it's the pass protection. Oh, it's the play calling. We're going into week 16 right now. Yeah. This is kind of like the rest of the team. Like, you fire the offensive coordinator, you fire the coach. At some point, it gets put onto the players. For Caleb Williams, he isn't left out of that. Like, at some point, these are things he is doing wrong within his own operation, within his own execution. And, you know, last night, you know, the self-inflicted stuff, I think, it's on everybody. Certainly the touchdown that got called back. But then it gets called back, and what happens? There were multiple missed throws by Caleb last night on that drive specifically. He comes into the game with an off-target percentage of right around 22%. Yesterday it was like at 17, so it's like kind of just a little bit below season average. But for it to show up in those sorts of moments where I don't know if he was panicking, I don't know if he felt rushed, certainly – you know, they weren't blitzing him that much. They're dropping back into coverage. So it's not like, oh my God, you know, he's got Andrew Van Ginkle or Jonathan Grenard like on him constantly. It just feels like an onslaught of like thing after thing after thing that keeps hurting him in these moments where, you know, he's laying on the ground looking like Charlie Brown after Lucy keeps pulling the football away from him. And that defeatist, it's not a defeatist mentality, but just like true defeatist, like, you know, he's a defeated player right now.
Yeah, you can see it setting in.
You could, yeah. And I think what Troy Aikman said on the broadcast last night is so apparent to the reality that Caleb Williams is in right now. And I remember asking him this, I believe it was maybe right after Washington or right after Arizona, the thought that, Do you worry about taking this many hits? And I mean, he was hit three times, 2 sacks, but like, my God, Jihad Ward tried to send him into the state of Wisconsin with the way that he hit him in the fourth quarter. And that's when you see Caleb on the bench grimacing in pain, just like looking like, what more can I do?
Yeah.
Those are the things that break you as a quarterback. Those are the things that he can say whatever he wants. No, it's not going to break me mentally, but yeah, I am physically feeling not so great. I don't care. That's not truthful. It can break you mentally. And I'm not saying that he's not a mentally tough person and he can't overcome adversity. That is natural because you're going to become gun shy. And the fact that we're at week 16 and this stuff keeps happening, I think it is within everybody's right to be concerned about how this is going to take a toll on Caleb Williams and how it's going to affect him in the future. Now, with the right coaching, with the right, with, you know, a better offensive line, all of those things, could that change? Sure. We said the same things about Justin Fields, though, after year one. I don't like to compare the two at all, but the fact that Fields was one of the most hit quarterbacks as a rookie, what did he look like in year two? We're seeing a lot of ghosts out there. Yeah. And granted, he was playing behind a bad offensive line. That's my fear for Caleb Williams. If you're the Bears, you're seeing deja vu right now. You're seeing a very similar situation play out where your quarterback is getting battered, and it's breaking his soul. He may not admit that publicly, but his body language tells it for him.
No, 100%. And listen, it was my fear. I said it in week two, Courtney, when he got sacked seven times versus the Tennessee or versus the Houston Texans. And I still say it here. I do believe that this season lies at the feet of Ryan Poles. You thought that you were going to get Jesus Christ with a football on his arm, and he was going to be able to just sail the football to anybody out there, and that defenders were going to magically just miss him the entire season, and you didn't put him in a great situation. But to that same point, when we're at this point in the season, I can also look at Caleb Williams and say, but you got to make your life easier. And the one thing that I think Joe Burrow does, and why when everybody always points to, you know, when I say the O-line's bad, well, why can Joe Burrow do it? Joe Burrow doesn't miss those moments. Mm-hmm. When Ja'Marr Chase is streaking open down the left sideline by a step and a half, he hits Ja'Marr Chase in stride, and Ja'Marr Chase goes out there and is able to be Ja'Marr Chase. When you see T. Higgins or whoever it is get themselves open, Joe Burrow does what he can, does the little shimmy moves, which a lot more mobile this season than I think I've ever seen him, probably for the best for him, but he hits those guys when they're open, and then it does turn into things where it doesn't end up in a sack. It doesn't end up in a fumble. It doesn't end up in a situation where you're spending more time than not on the ground. Is that to say Joe Burrow's not still getting hit? No, he's getting killed out there. He's still one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL. But when you hit those moments, you can keep your team in a game, and that's the one thing that we haven't seen from him. And listen, maybe that's too much to ask for a rookie. But that is the moniker that was put on Caleb Williams, that Joe Burrow status coming into this season.
And that he was going to be able to overcome a bad offensive line, because he did in college. And, I mean, that's the difference between college and the NFL. Yeah. I think he's having to learn that he can't be Superman. And Lincoln Riley emboldened him to be Superman, to overcome and make the hero plays. And there were a couple times you saw him get out there last night, make some guys miss. But then he's missing on the run in those moments. I don't know if that's just because he's rushed or if guys aren't getting open.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the latter. I think that there were plenty of receivers that were open last night. And, yeah, there was, you know, there was that one, like, to Rome Odunze that I think Keenan Allen, like, sort of broke up the pass accidentally.
Yeah, he stole it from him. But it still, like, hit him in only both hands.
Yes. Like, it's just the production. Like, you take a look, Pat, at, you know, what their numbers are right now. Like, I think about the – Allen and Williams connection. So he's, again, fourth game where he's been targeted double digits, but you're turning in, and I mean, the numbers aren't bad. It's 66 catches for 82 yards and a touchdown, but he's targeted 13 times.
Yeah.
And you're turning about half of that into actual production. I don't think that's on Keenan Allen. I mean, yes, there was a drop last week. Okay. Sometimes those things happen. That's kind of rare though. I don't think it's on him. I think that that's more on a quarterback issue. And Caleb's been miffed by it too. He knows that, like, these are not throws that he normally misses.
Yeah.
And is some of that a byproduct of how bad the offensive line has been, the pass protection? Even Thomas Brown was asked about, like, why can't you pass the ball down? Like, Caleb was averaging, I think it was 0.6 air yards per attempt in the first half last night. His longest pass was no longer than like 9 yards.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why can't you get a passing game going? Well, it's kind of hard to do that when your pass protection is terrible. Thomas Brown said a version of that last night. So it's not like he doesn't know what the problem is. But at some point, do you have to start thinking about the future and start thinking about, we can't – he's already teetering on the verge of a really dark place right now that quarterbacks go and a lot of times can't really recover from. How do you play that these final three games to make sure it doesn't go to the point of no return? Because that would be catastrophic, I think, for their return on investment with this quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I said my biggest fear coming into this season was you were going to turn him into David Carr. you were going to turn him in a guy who's beaten and battered, and clearly everyone can see the talent. Everyone can see, you know, the throws, and he's still making those throws here in the pros. The game translated better from college than we thought it was. Yeah, there's some misses on the deep shots, but when you throw the football underneath, you see the offense start to get going, and you got to do what you got to do now. But when you just beat a guy down, and we can sit here and say, are there moments where it's on him? 100%.
Yep.
But there's a lot of moments last night where my third round pick doesn't know where he's at on a football field. I get it. First start ever.
He's put in a tough spot.
But the reason that we praised Braxton Jones was as a fifth round pick, he walked on the field and looked like he knew how to play football. Like that, those are the moments where, not to say it's all on Caleb Williams, but where I look at Ryan Poles and I think, you know, Courtney, we look at the third round picks he's drafted here. Third round picks are supposed to be starters, like maybe not stars, but starters, glue guys. Mm-hmm. Valus Jones, Zach Pickens, Karan Amagaji.
Yeah.
When you look at the fourth round, we got Tyler Scott and we got Torrey Taylor, which I guess Torrey Taylor's a solid piece, except for the fact that you paid $8 million for a running back, and there were two of them that you could have picked up in that round. Oh, you still need a starting center. Cedric Van Pran can play football as well. I'm really starting to get concerned with Ryan Poles to the point where it's like, you can hit the – he's got singles. He's got the Caleb Williams. He's got the Roma Dunzes. He's got the big hits. But he can't give me an album. You can't give me the stuff in the middle that makes a football team complete. And not only that, you're not even swinging at big pieces. You're taking chances on, say what you want, D2 school guys. You're taking chances on Ivy League school guys. You're taking chances on guys who were like you to give them an opportunity in the third round to hear their name get called. Cool. But it's not helping your team.
The draft picks are, I mean, the Karan thing last night, he didn't stand a chance. And we know that Braxton was a late add to the injury report with a concussion, which is interesting that it showed up all those days later. I don't know how that's possible.
I was thrown off by that.
I don't really understand that one, but I get why they did it to a degree, because Larry Borum ain't going to be here next year.
Nope.
So you might as well get a look at, like, it's kind of like what happened like 2 years ago or even last year when they're playing guys that they want to get a look at that they expect to be contributing the following season. But you do that at the cost of your quarterback being protected. And I don't think it would have been any better with Larry Borum. Like, they're kind of like SOL at that spot where they have their backup offense. Remember, you know, depth is the best it's ever been. That's clearly not the case.
It's going to be hard to make this team, Courtney.
But it's, and the third round picks that you mentioned, you can't look past and just say, like, oh, it's just like, you know, that's an anomaly. I think it's more of an aberration. They haven't hit on them. Zach Pickens played, you know, last night because Jervon Dexter was injured. Did he do anything memorable? No.
Has
he done anything memorable?
I saw him reaching for Aaron Jones's legs as he ran past him.
Yeah.
I that's the first time I noticed him on the field. I was like, oh, Zach Pickens is playing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you've got Tyler Scott, you've got all these other guys who, like, you know, somewhere around that, you know, third round, early day three picks. I mean, Roshan Johnson has a concussion. He hasn't been playing. Tyler Scott hasn't been playing. You know, they just have not been able to capitalize on some of the guys who are supposed to be the depth pieces on this team that step up when you need them. And, you know, I'm starting to really feel like the heat on Ryan Poles is, I mean, certainly valid. But I feel like it's becoming more real that we could be having that conversation about, is he going to be here? And, you know, you think about the next couple of weeks. I know that what Kevin Warren said gave the vote of confidence and all that. But if this thing looks like it did last night, the next three games, are you confident that you have the right people making football decisions? If you're Kevin Warren, who's running the show, to continue on that way? The noise is only getting louder. And when you have a performance, like, just like, the numbers are so jarring. Like, it's honestly, we always kind of joke about, like, oh, they're going to find a new way to lose. But, like, to go 1 of 12 on third down, to register one third down, the only other time they did that was against the Patriots this year in a game where they looked like a bad football team. And I know that that game really, really bothered Ryan Poles. And that's what they looked like last night. They looked like a bad football team. And to get shut out, they have a minus 56 point differential in their last three first quarters. last three first halves.
Yeah.
That's so bad. Like, you know, I don't want to hear we need to execute better. We need to like get off to a fast start because you've shown us you can't. So until you can show us that you're, that, you know, until you can show that you can are capable of doing the things that you say that you want to do, it's like, it's all falling on deaf ears. Like, and people don't want to hear that anymore because it's all null and void when you just you just truly can't do it.
Yeah.
And that's on the personnel. Like I've said this for a while now. You can fire the coaches. You can, you know, change what you're doing scheme wise a little bit, make some tweaks here and there. This is a talent issue at this point. It's a talented roster in a couple different spots, but more than not, you have a team that is going to be looking to make some upgrades or going to need to make some upgrades if they want to be a good team. Cause right now it's not cutting it.
I think it shows you though, that you can try and be smarter than the smartest. And at the end of the day, football is a simple game that is won by being more physical and bigger than other teams. And what I mean by that is he tried to build it backwards. He went out and got his receivers. Guess what? I know all of these guys are talented receivers. I know what Keenan Allen can do. I know DJ Moore is a talented receiver. I know that Roma Dunze is probably going to be one of the better receivers in this league with the ability that he has. I can look at Caleb Williams and say, this kid can play football. DeAndre Swift, I never was in on. He ain't this bad. He's bad. Don't get me wrong. I would have never signed him for Philly, but he ain't this bad. Mm-hmm. But you tried to get smart and go, we don't need to spend money on the trenches. We don't need to draft the trenches. We don't need to draft the offensive line. We're going to be just fine. We can develop
these guys. Like you can go get the backup center from the Rams who's going to be let to walk in free agency and be like, that guy, this is what happens with football teams.
Yes.
They all think they can fix guys. They all think, oh, in our system, he'll be better. In our system, he'll be a star. Saw it with Ryan Bates. And I mean, yeah, the guy's got a concussion. Okay, that's fine. But like, even when he was healthy, but the guy has an arthritic condition in his shoulder. And yeah. You knew that when you traded for him.
Yeah.
Some of these decisions are so arrogant, and the audacity when you think about it makes you wonder, well, what the hell were they thinking? That they could just outsmart everybody and think that they're coaching, which, correct me if I'm wrong here. Has anybody gotten a promotion off of any of the Bears staffs that have been here since 2022? Some people have gotten other jobs. Some people have gotten fired from other jobs.
Yeah.
Nobody is outsmarting anybody. The coaching
only internally. We saw our offensive line last year. And we were like, you know what, Simo?
Yeah.
But you handle the run game as well.
But
wait
like,
a minute. What?
And that's the maddening part of this, to think that like they had the answers internally, that they could just get whoever they want, whichever crop of talent that, you know, just to fill out a 53-man roster. And it was sold as a bill of goods that, wow, this is going to be a really talented team. It's going to be a hard roster to make. Like, no, it's, you know, were there hard decisions? Sure. But, you know, you've seen the way they played, those decisions panned out should not have been hard because you have a bunch of backups that you thrust into starters' roles and guys that you're trying to justify.
Walking off crying over Adrian Colbert shouldn't be a hard decision. I shouldn't be crying over my third string safety. Like, listen, I get it. He's a good dude, no shoes, rides a bike, cool people. This is business, and that's my concern with Ryan Poles moving forward. You want smiles in the room. You want kumbaya. You want best friends. You don't want a winning football team, and that's what scares me about. Like I really do. I left last night's game, Courtney, going, is this football a head coach away? Can you change the head coach and change the culture and the talent on this team? Change the development on this team? And I look at the talent and I go, yes. You go get Mike Vrabel. You go get one of the top guys out there. I do believe you could. But I don't believe they'll hire that guy because they're scared of what he might walk in the room and say. They're scared that when Ryan Poles is about to pick up the phone and call a fourth-round punter to make him excited, that one of the coaches is going to go, what are you doing? Put the phone down. We got to talk about this. They're scared that there's going to be a loud voice in the room that's going to give them pushback because they've had free run of the building for 3 years, and realistically, it hasn't produced anything. Like, I truly believe this team is nowhere near as bad as we think it is, but it will always be worse because they don't want the strong voices in the room. They don't want the people that can go out there and actually make a change to the culture and make an impact. They want yes men. And yes men aren't good football coaches.
Well, I do think that they want to. They obviously want to win, but I don't think they know how to. I don't think they know what the how to establish a culture like that, which is like I've always said this about winning teams that are relevant, but like never. I used to say this about the Vikings, and I think I've said this on this podcast.
Yeah.
I always thought that the Minnesota Vikings, when I covered them, wanted to be sitting at the cool kids' table at lunch in high school, but they never wanted to be the queen bee or prom queen, because to do that, to be an actual Super Bowl contender, other than the playoff team that like goes to the wild card round every year, might get to the divisional playoffs, might make a run at the NFC Championship, it takes a shitload of sacrifice and a lot of hard work and like a lot of luck to make that stuff happen. And it's effort that like normal football teams, a lot of teams can't stomach because of what you said, because of the decisions that have to be made on personnel and like some really hard decisions that may suck in the short term, but be better for the long term. And sometimes you end up kind of cutting your nose off to spite your face to do those things. And I find that like very few teams can do that well, which is why like a team like, you know, Kansas City or hell, even a team like Philly or the Lions before all the injuries, it takes years to build those things and you have to remain steadfast on it. Like let's use the Lions, for example, because we've talked about this a lot. They started building that offensive line two staffs ago. They started in 2016 when they drafted the tackle. And then every year they were like, I don't care how long it takes. We're going to go get another one in the first round. We're going to get this guy in the second round. We're going to get this center in the first round. Like that's what they did. And those are decisions that sometimes ownership won't sign off on because it takes too long, but that's stability. And most teams do not have the time or the wherewithal to do that. And I think the Bears are kind of in that same situation. Like Ryan Poles did not have the longest of leashes as much as he was. And this is my drop when I get brought on to Cap and J-Hood and they pull something I said like early on that Poles was given the freedom and the flexibility to tear the roster down to the studs. That doesn't mean he has 6 years to make this thing happen. He had to make it happen sooner rather than later. That's why they moved on from Justin Fields, because they did not have time to give him another year to develop and see this thing through. So where you were undertaking a massive project and trying to make something work, you also have to be pretty swift about it. And they haven't. And with every miss that they've had on players that do not execute in games and do not really contribute or add value, it just kind of shows you just how far away they have to go. And, you know, bringing it back to the coaching point, I don't know if like the head coach, I mean, like hiring a head coach, getting, you know, having a different voice with personnel, like not different, like if Ryan Poles remains the general manager, which as of right now, he's going to, like, you know, we've not heard anything like, but like, you know, him and the new head coach being on the same page on personnel. Hey, this is what we need. This is where we need to go get this player. We're going to go address these needs in free agency, this in the draft, et cetera. Like, that's got to be priority number one. I don't know if that means that the roster is going to be a 10-win roster last year, because we thought that this year.
Yeah.
And they can't go about it outside in, outside from the inside out the way that they did. Shit, they built this defensive line from the inside out because they were convincing us that all you need to do is dent the pocket from the interior, you know, powerful three technique in this Tampa 2 sort of defense is the key to it. While that's true, you can't neglect the edge. Look at last night. Like, what an indictment where they were so concerned about Montez Sweat being able to hit free agency and he's not going to want to come back to Chicago. He's going to want to go to Atlanta, all these things, which is probably true.
Yeah.
But they were so afraid that they weren't going to be able to get somebody. Look at Jonathan Granada. Dude has 11 sacks in season. Andrew Van Ginkle had an injury. I believe it was in Miami. And, you know, there was that concern. I know there were a lot of teams that were like, whoa, Vikings went out and signed this guy. And look at him. Like, it just feels like the gambles and the risks that they're putting into all of this are not paying off for them whatsoever. And that's, you know, that's what's going to end up hurting them more than anything else as they turn the team over to a new head coach in the offseason and say, hey, fix this. That person's going to be inheriting all of these problems before that person can establish their culture, what they want to do, and how they want to run the team.
No, 100%. It's concerning to me because it's like you're going to give them the job and say, hey, fix this, but are you actually going to let them fix it? But the biggest aspect of being flexible as a front office to something that your coaches are telling you that probably turns out to be true is what we saw in San Francisco when Kyle Shanahan had to walk into his general manager's office and go, You're not going to want to hear this after you just paid a bunch of money for one QB and drafted another one really high. But that dude you took last in the draft is the best quarterback on the team.
And that's a good example, too, because, you know, for as good of a team as they've been, yes, this year's terrible because of injuries. Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch had a lot of misses early on from all of the, like, third-round picks, the corners that were, like, on there. You know, Trent Baalke, the former GM there, like, had this, like, penchant for, like, going out and getting cornerbacks, DBs with, like, ACL injuries and being like, we can fix them. Reuben Foster, like, need I say anymore? Like, they had their fair share of things blow up in their face.
Yeah.
But once they prioritize, hey, go get the best guy, pay whatever it takes, and make it work. Then they and once they got the quarterback position right, that's when they became, you know, a team that was that like had a foundation. This team has the ability to have a foundation because they have a quarterback who they believe in that they want to build around, but they haven't done that last part to make it like worth anybody's while to think that this thing is actually going to get any better right now.
No, for sure. A lot of concerns around this team. Hopefully we'll be able to find some answers this offseason, but it doesn't feel very promising for a lot of Bears fans out there right now. And I don't know if we're heading towards another Bears civil war here, but Ryan Poles, you got to get something working real quick because this fan base is getting anxious. The only saving grace, Courtney, is, and I saw this yesterday and I almost had a little sigh of relief, 3 games in 11 days. I know it sucks for the players. I know it sucks for travel. But it's almost over, and you're going to get through quite a bit of it really quickly.
No, you're not wrong about that. And, you know, I keep thinking, all right, is there anything that Caleb can take away from these tests that he's going through where you've got to flush this game, you've got to, you know, get your body right.
Yeah.
Maybe you catch a break because Detroit's so injured on defense right now and really everywhere else, but it just still feels like it's such an uphill battle against 3 teams, you know, 2 that are definitely in the playoffs and 1 that, you know, if things break their way in the NFC West, Seattle will be there too.
Yeah. It's
maybe you can learn something about yourself in it, but it feels like a long shot right now.
It'd be good to get some wins to finish the season, but if you're going to lose out, I mean, I guess lose out in dramatic fashion. Hey, we'll be back tomorrow breaking down more of this team. Jason McKee on the pod. Going to be interesting to see what he thought of the game as he was on the sideline for it. It's always fun hearing J-Mac just go, oh, I couldn't believe it. But for Courtney Cronin, it's your boy, Pat the Designer. Back at it again. Appreciate you guys for tuning in and showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. One love. Peace.